you, Ellen. We would now like to open the call up for questions. Before you present your question, kindly provide your name and the company you are representing. Operator, we are now ready to take questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your first question comes from the line of Mr. Joel Ng from KGI Fraser. Please ask your question.
Hi. Good morning, Ellen. Good morning, Roger.
Roger. Good morning.
Morning. Okay, can I just ask about the renewal of the Shannon Fisher and the Solway Fisher? How much were rates lower compared to last year?
The rates have, they have dropped down, but we have a variable rate that, so the first period of the rate, it drops down to $2,150. The previous rates were in euros as well, so we've tried to take away that currency exposure as well. But this is basically in line for this small size. These are small 5,000-ton ships operating in the North Sea in the U.K. And this is really the market rate for this sort of ship. And we also have a preference in the sense that to change employment would mean taking over the technical management or changing the ship management on the ship, which on a ship this size would have quite a big impact on your rates going forward. And also we're very happy with, let's say, James Fisher as a counterparty and the quality of the way they operate the ships and the let's say the level of security in the sense that it's they're a listed company operating in as currently, let's say, with good profits.
No, agreed. I mean, they're certainly a strong counterparty and one that we've enjoyed a good relationship with over a period of time. In terms of just to give you a little bit of guidance, so when we say a variable rate, what we mean is that it varies, as opposed to it is variable in the context of the market. The rates are fixed. It's 2,150 for the first 30 months, and then it steps up to 2,450 for the remaining period on both of the vessels, and the vessels are fixed out for 5 years. So what that is meant to capture is we understand, obviously, we had a renewal that we wanted to make at this point in time, and the market has been a little bit flat for a little while, and so we wanted to ensure that there was a little bit of a step up in terms of those rates in the future. And again, what this does give us is on the value of the vessels at the moment, as we look at it, we get a decent return, and it certainly contributes to our ability to repay our financing across the board in terms of the fleet. So they are still cash generative, and they do still provide a decent yield to the trust. And so really those are the kind of key indicators we look at when we're trying to renew those deals. And so although the pricing is slightly lower than it was previously, they're certainly still contributors to the fleet and contributors to our ability to pay down debt and to generate profits and cash flow.
Oh, right. And if I recall correctly, the previous rates were in euros, and they were around the 3,000 range.
Yeah. Yes, it's 3,000 euros. So basically the rate we've ended up at is a matter of, obviously it's a matter of negotiating, but also we examine, so the time charter rate, which is the alternative we would have really, And for this size ship, this is, you know, the rate we've achieved with James Fisher over the five-year period, we feel is quite a good rate in the sense that we do have a five-year contract rather than some of the alternatives were like six-month contracts on time charter, which would have involved large costs changing ship management, and then you'd only have 6 months of security with the ship.
Okay. And moving to the inner ships, FSL Busan and Santos, what kind of rates it is?
Well, the feeder container market has been a little bit variable over time, and obviously the arrangement that we have on those ships is that they're in a pool, but the way that pool tends to work is it puts ships out for, say, 3-6 months on time charter, and then you end up enjoying a pooled earning across the 25 or 30 ships they have in the pool at any given time. But obviously it lags. So if the ships are being fixed out for 3 or 6 months on average, then you end up kind of building up. So if the market is rising, you get a slower kind of access to that rise, but equally if it's falling, you get some insulation. The rates that we're seeing at the moment are probably around 7.5 a day on a TCE basis, so 7,500. And that's, again, providing us with a decent return over our OPEX cost. And that market, again, what we saw for a while is that it was getting dragged down a little bit because Panamax container, the underlying spot market there was quite challenging. Now that's moved away a little bit again, as it should, because it is a separate market and because the assets aren't interchangeable, given the ports that they call and the draft restrictions and other issues within each of those ports that they do call. So again, that market is providing decent returns and continues to. And you know, the good thing about that is that the order book is small, and that those ships, the market dynamics from a supply side point of view is unlikely to change too much in the near future.
Okay. Can I ask about the dry docking of the three chemical tankers in this quarter? The first question is how long will that dry docking take? And the second one is the CAPEX for the dry docking and the special surveys.
Okay. So obviously a dry docking takes as long as it takes, but what we try and do and what we work hard to do and Roger and the team work hard and do very well at is trying to plan optimally how we can get towards a cost-effective yard to do the dry docking, how we can try and take the vessel out of circulation, if you like, or out of its kind of earning period for as short a time as possible, and that's how we look at it. I mean, what we do in terms of, from a kind of budgeting and forecasting point of view, is we allocate somewhere between 24 and 30 days in terms of the time that a vessel is out of service for its dry dock and special survey, and that includes ballast passage and return to circulation. We've been, again, fortunate because we're dealing with a very helpful counterparty in Nordic Tankers. They have helped us ensure that we're positioning the vessels appropriately to minimize the time that we have to take off hire to get to port, and back out into the program in terms of getting the next cargo and getting to the next load port. And so, again, we give the guidance of 24 to 30 days. That's how we look at it. We aim to do less than that in terms of off-hire, in terms of loss of earnings during that period of time. And in terms of the CapEx on dry docks, it's one of these things that varies to a degree. We have the kind of CapEx and dry dock budgets that come into us and that we approve, and what we try and do is balance out the cost in different yards, and they do vary enormously, in different parts of the world, and we try and balance that out with where we are in the world and the cost to get to different places and also the time off hire and everything else. So we don't just look at that in isolation. We look at that as a as a process and how we can optimize that process. And I think the CapEx requirements probably somewhere between $800,000 and $1 million per vessel for this size and type of ship. I mean, they're quite specialized ships despite being reasonably small. I mean, kind of 20,000 deadweight tons, but they are stainless steel coated tanks, and that in itself means that they are a bit more expensive. They've got 20 or 22 tanks given the ship itself. Again, they're quite specialized vessels, and so the cost is as high as it would be probably on, say, an MR tanker, which is almost double or at least double the size. But these are quite specific and quite specialized ships. And so, yeah, I mean, we forecast somewhat, I guess we expect or budget $800 to $1 million per ship. And the benefit also of dry docking at the moment, which should not be forgotten, is the fact that, one, those ships go out and that's CapEx for the next 5 years on those particular vessels, but also we're managing to dry dock those vessels prior to the ballast water treatment being effectively agreed across the water. And the ballast water treatment, that is an issue that's going to affect all dry docks in the future once that is ratified. And you know that adds significant cost because you end up either having to put a ballast water treatment plant on the ship, or you have to start adding voyage cost by treating the ballast water, and all of that comes into effect, or will come into effect fairly soon by the look of it. And once ratified, any dry docks that are done in the year after that is ratified, you would end up have to retrospectively fit ballast water treatment plant on ships, and the costs for those kind of systems varies, but the kind of reasonable amount, at least that we're looking at, is probably $400,000, $500,000 per ship. So one benefit of dry docking these ships in 16 is that they don't fall into a category that needs retrospective ballast water treatment plants to be fitted. I hope that's helpful.
That's very helpful. And if I may, can I just add maybe a few more questions?
Sure.
Okay, regarding the dividends, can I just check what kind of financial ratios that management or the board looks at for when paying the dividends? For example, net gearing, or in your case, in your presentation, I see that you're using the net debt over assets. So can I just get
from what point of view, in terms of how do those ratios relate to distribution?
Yeah,
policy?
I mean, what kind of financial metrics do you use when you think about giving dividends?
Well, the key driver of the ability to pay distributions will be the line in our accounts about the amount of cash that we generate that is distributable. So that's really what will drive distributions in the future. I think what we've said thus far and our position remains this, is that at the moment we have a financing package that is effectively, the tenor of that runs to the end of 2017. We're working hard with quality institutions at the moment to try and proactively refinance that, and that will provide us with two things really. Firstly, it'll provide us with a new improved kind of tenor of debt for the next 5-6 years. The second thing it will do is obviously give us visibility in terms of profitability and, more importantly, cash flow over debt service, which will enable us to understand how that cash generation will profile over the foreseeable future. And I think what we've been quite clear in saying so far is that only once we've seen how that debt will profile over the future years will we be in a position to look to start distributions again and look to give guidance as to what those distributions will be. I mean, but certainly what we're aiming at the moment is to refinance the fleet in the next kind of certainly in the foreseeable future, we won't mark any, we won't put a date on it at the moment, but we're working hard towards that. And as I say, once we have that visibility, we're also trying to look to improve the scheduled repayment profile of our current debt and look to free up the ability to distribute from there. And I think that's going to be one of the key outcomes of the refinancing. Not least will it provide us with runway, but it'll also provide us hopefully with the ability to distribute going forward.
Last two questions. Can you just get your view on the macro picture, the supply situation for tankers? Are you seeing a larger supply of tankers coming into the market in the near term?
From an order book point of view, not really. I mean, what we're seeing at the moment, despite shipyards being under pressure and pricing being under pressure, not that many people are ordering or adding to the order book. In 2016, so far, we've seen quite a lot of ships come to the market. I think the kind of product tanker net fleet growth for 16 and 17 is quite balanced at about 7.5% per year. I mean, obviously, depending on which statistics you look at, but that's reasonable guidance, and I think that was Clarkson's guidance earlier in the year. And so, we're quite, while we're quite circumspect about the addition of those vessels to the market, last year the impact of the order book was significantly greater. And in terms of sector by sector, I think 15 and 16 are probably the years where more MRs have come into the market. And again, they were absorbed quite successfully during the course of last year. This year, we're seeing a little bit of an impact from increased supply-side numbers. The LR2s, so the larger product tankers, more ships hit this year than last year. And I think we're seeing the impact of that to a degree this year in terms of softening rates. But I think the bigger driver of softening rates is more the stockpiling of refined products around the world and the reduction in refinery margins. So, I mean, while supply side issues have created obviously a lot of the problem that we have in a lot of markets, from a shipping point of view, not least obviously container and dry bulk, I think the supply side issues around the tanker market are reasonably balanced for the next couple of years, and certainly what we see is light at the end of the tunnel from the point of view that beyond 17, the order book for tankers is much, much lower. And so while we expect rates not to kind of fly going forward, we expect them to be reasonable and stable and perhaps improve a bit. And we would hope that given the fact that the order book does look much more promising in terms of number of ships adding to the fleet from late 17 onwards, we'd hope that gives the market some room to improve on the rates.
Just one final question. The situation with the traders pouring oil in tankers, seeing less of that? Will you be seeing less of that going forward?
Sorry, will we see less kind of demand inquiry from the oil traders?
Oil in tankers due to the oversupply in oil.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's different there's different things. I mean, obviously, it seems at the moment that we're having to get used to a low oil price environment, and that's no bad thing from a cost base for the shipping market. If it's driven by supply, it can also be quite a good thing for the tanker market, as we saw last year. In terms of demand from the traders, to be perfectly honest, the trader demand is going to move with outside of factors that normally affect shipping, if you like, from the point of view that the traders, one, some of them have built up books of vessels anyway, and so they have their own kind of charter book. Secondly, we're seeing still quite a lot of floating storage out there, and at the moment, while those oil prices and product prices aren't really rising, then there is unlikely to be a significant release of vessels back into the market from storage. So that's quite helpful. And then also, I think that the real driver from a trading point of view is going to be kind of arbitrage, is going to be what's the different pricing in different places and what kind of margins can be made for traders looking to buy a cargo in one place and taking it to another place. And so obviously that's something that we don't control, but our ARBs do open and regularly. And what we do have is tonnage of the right kind of size and caliber to be used by traders. But obviously also we've got good contract coverage on the MRs, particularly on the two ice class MRs, the Hamburg and the Singapore. And so I think, you know, it's difficult to say exactly how trader demand is profiling. Again, from a product point of view, and that's really where we see the traders being more active, at least, you know, visibly to us because of the vessels that we have. It's about, I mean, the supply is about refinery margins. The pricing is more about arbitrages in terms of, from a trading perspective. So those things don't really, you know, kind of, they're not things that we can control, and they're not things that, that I guess the shipping market has any influence over, particularly. But certainly we still see there being significant demand from traders for product tankers, and certainly on you know, in the MR market, that's really there. I guess that's where how they move an awful lot of the product that they buy.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Ang Hao Yao, who is a private investor. Please ask your question.
Hi. I just have a couple short questions, given that the first person asked many of the questions already. You mentioned several times about low refinery margins. How does that affect us? Because, you know, the largest segment of revenue that we have comes from our chemical tankers.
The refinery margins deals more with the clean product market. From the point of view that, and by refinery margins, what I'm talking about is that if you run a refinery, then obviously you take crude oil and you've got different amounts that you can sell different parts of that barrel for, depending on how you refine it. So what we're saying is that the margins for producing kind of lighter, cleaner products varies over time. And so if the crack spreads or refinery margins are high, then there is an awful lot of, I guess, there's a good incentive for the refiners to produce more of the cleaner, lighter products, which then get put on primarily out of the vessels that we have, the LR2s that we have. So the two vessels that are on floating rate bareboat charters with TORM. And so what we've seen over the last, 6 to 12 months is refinery margins for those clean products falling. And so while that was very helpful at the start, because not only did we have a kind of a low oil price environment, which helps both costs, but also from a supply point of view, that was driven by OPEC not curbing production, meaning an awful lot more barrels were in the market anyway and needed to find a home. Also, with the incentive on refiners to refine different grades and to produce more clean products, because, again, they made more money by selling those clean products and the margins were higher, that meant that there was a lot more product to move in the market. So the demand for those vessels went up. With the refinery margins coming off, then obviously the supply can also be curbed a little bit because they'll start doing different grades or not refining as much and moving, and so more crude will move or more heavier oil products or more, I guess, dirty. I mean, we look at the clean and the dirty market, if you like. The clean market is anything with a specific gravity lighter than 2.5. And so you're looking at kind of gasoline, gas oil, naphtha, the refined products that are used in all kinds of different things, both in terms of powering cars, but also in terms of plastics and other industrial production. From a chemical tanker point of view, our chemical tankers, the three that we have in the spot market, really don't trade any of the oil products in that regard. They do have kind of chemical cargoes that are oil product related, but it's much more the LR2s that will be beneficiaries of an improved refinery margin situation. From a chemical tanker point of view, again, that we see that market as a little bit more an industrial logistics market. It's quite niche. It's quite high in terms of barriers to entry. And again, we've got a very good partner in Nordic Tankers who have very good contract cover. They have COAs, so contracts of affreightment, in place for about 55 to 60% of the products they move. So although we have spot exposure, if you like, in that market, we already know that they have underlying contracts for most of the runs that they do. In terms of, you know, those ships, we're looking at very different kind of indicators rather than refinery margins per se, and that's more, again, the negotiations that are happening around the COAs that our partner has, and those are generally quite positive. And then also looking at the way in which, you know, chemicals are moving, and in general, the good thing about that market is that that's a little bit more predictable than, say, the oil markets, from the point of view that most of the chemicals that are being transported are being used in industrial production. While there's GDP and economic growth in general across the world, then we'll see an improvement and an increase in demand for products and trade in general. And so that tracks quite nicely in terms of the chemical markets. I don't know, Roger, if you've got any more insight on that.
No, the only thing I would add is also on the, going back to your original question on the refinery margins, is one of the impacts we'll see now is as the refinery margins come down, there's a sort of quite a backlog of delayed maintenance in refineries. They've been holding off because they've been making such good money, and now they've come down, so they'll start doing that maintenance, which will take out some production. But that's otherwise, I think that's held it.
I hope that's helpful.
Okay. Yes, just a quick one. So our ships will stay in the Nordic pool, the Nordic tankers pool, right? It's just being taken out for the special survey and dry docking, but it'll go back in.
So what happens is, to give you kind of an idea of how it works, obviously we have flexibility as to how we employ them, and we're very happy with the service that Nordic has provided thus far, and so we feel that actually the returns that we're making have been higher than they would be if we were with another pool operator, or indeed if we were looking to take cover and charter those vessels out. We're also quite happy with the coverage that 55 to 60% contract cover in the pool provides. So given those two things, with higher earnings in the market and decent cover, it doesn't make sense, we don't think, economically to move the ships at this point in time. What happens around a dry dock is, to keep in class and to keep the vessels approved, we obviously need to dry dock and run a special survey every 5 years. What we do is we try and find the optimum time within the kind of couple of months or few months around the date that the certificates from class need to be renewed and approved for due, and we try and optimize that around the trading patterns of the ships and try and make sure that we take as little time out of the market as possible, so we improve and increase our earnings, and that we try and also optimize where we're dry docking, because the cost of dry docking varies tremendously around the world. I mean, to give you some kind of idea on dry docking, I think still the cheapest yards in terms of quotes are in China. You probably add 25 to 30% the minute you move outside China and you come to Singapore or other parts of Asia. There are parts of Europe that are competitive, Turkey and the Baltics, and we're looking at Lithuania this time round, the yard that we're using. And that's a balance between having to take the ship from the trading pattern that it's in and ballast it to wherever it is. So, I mean, with the trading patterns of the chemical tankers, which tends to be US to Europe and back, to try and take them to Chinese yards would be very, very expensive as an exercise. So what we try and do is find the most cost-effective, reputable yards close to the trading pattern of those ships and look to dry dock those as and when that becomes possible. And so what's had to happen this time to ensure, I guess, an optimal return both in terms of income and cost is that all three have fallen in quite close conjunction, and that's just due to the trading patterns of the ships and where we want to dry dock them and the deal that we've managed to negotiate through our technical managers with the yard that we're using to run the special surveys. So it's quite a complex process to put together with both technical and commercial input. But I think, you know, we're quite happy in terms of the yard that we've managed to put the ships into and with the quotes that we've had so far, and also with the amount of time out of service each of the ships will have to take, because we've worked well with Nordic thus far to try and optimize that. And I think it makes sense, again, those ships will go back into Nordic pool and back into the rotation that they were on before. And we see at the moment no real reason to change that. I mean, the rates that we're enjoying so far are certainly a premium to anything that we'd get on a time charter at the moment.
Okay, I have one question on the leverage, the way the banks calculate it. And I understand from the financial statements that we are currently in the band of 140% to 180%. Roughly, are we on the lower end or on the higher end of that? Because I know if you can move into the next category, obviously there's some rate benefits to it.
So the way that mechanism works is it's a mark-to-market valuation that we exercise that we have done every 6 months, and if we're over 140% value to loan, so the underlying asset value of our fleet is higher than 140% of the loan outstanding, then we obviously enjoy a reduced margin. I mean, the headline margin is 300 basis points. It's 280 between 140 and 180%, and then over 180%, you're absolutely right, it drops down to 260 basis points. Where are we on that metric at the moment? I mean, we're quite happy to be in that bracket at the moment. I wouldn't say it's going to be easy without a separate debt pay down to get to 180% anytime soon, and that's more because there's downward pressure on asset values. We've seen asset values drop quite a bit this year. I mean, I think I was looking at something from Clarkson's earlier in the week, and, you know, across the board, I think, you know, asset values have fallen between 10 and 15%, and certainly on the tanker side, despite earnings being reasonable still versus other parts of the market, you're looking at more like, you know, 15 to 20% fall in asset values since the start of the year. So obviously that puts a little bit of pressure on those metrics, but we've managed to maintain an asset valuation that keeps us within the 140 to 180 bracket. I think to move beyond that would take, you know, a separate debt payment or quite a big change in the asset value kind of environment at the moment, just because, you know, we're talking about a reasonable amount of debt that is outstanding, $244.5 million at the end of the quarter, and obviously to move between 140 and 180% of that is quite a significant change. But we are, you know, still quite happily in the bracket of 140 plus, and that does give us, you know, some saving in terms of our margin on the loan outstanding at the moment.
Okay, and all the best to refinancing, because I think aside from just dividends alone, you can also determine whether you want to buy more ships, right, if you can get it refinanced. So I do hope that can be done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's getting a balance between getting it done quickly and effectively, but also getting the best deal for the trust. And what we're not looking to do is run headlong into it and take any terms that are on the table. What we're looking to do is to try and do exactly as you say, to try and put ourselves in a position where we're not only refinancing, but we're providing an opportunity going forward to work with financial partners that will help us renew and grow the trust going forward. And so, you know, the discussion isn't just around refinancing the current 22 ships. It's about what can we do going forward? How can we, you know, look to tap the asset market and to put together more interesting and accretive deals for our unit holders going forward. So, I mean, certainly all of that is what's being discussed. We see, or at least I mean, my view on refinancing is that it should be as much an opportunity as it is something that we have to do. And we need to use that opportunity to position ourselves appropriately to be able to go out, renew, expand, improve the fleet, bring the average age down. But equally, we don't want to be in a position where we're over-levered. We're quite keen to maintain no more than 65% leverage in terms of mark-to-market, which is pretty much industry standard at the moment in terms of getting loans. And again, anything I think that we would look to do in conjunction with new financial partners or with the financial partners that we have that we could refinance with would be, I think, you know, moving out, we would look to try and make investments that do a few things. One would be to, again, improve the leverage, and so we'd probably have lower leverage on new deals, but also we'd probably try and look to renew the fleet from an age perspective. We'd look to try and bring in some younger tonnage to revitalize the fleet a little bit. So all of those considerations are being taken into account while we negotiate refinancing. And, you know, we're not just looking at trying to refinance the current fleet. We're looking at how can we best position ourselves to improve the not just the fleet, but also the earning potential of the trust, and obviously the ability to distribute and provide a return for our unit holders going forward as well. So that's really what we're looking at, and that's why the process takes some time. We're not prepared to just accept the first offer that we have that ticks refinancing boxes. We're looking to use this as an opportunity to move forward as well.
Yeah, thank you. And of course, at a certain stage, your time will be running down. So then that will also make it more difficult to get a better deal. So I think you probably find an optimal point somewhere to seal the deal.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, we're looking at balance. One of the reasons we've gone out to the market this year is because the contract cover remains reasonable. The contract cover that we have from the Yangming vessels gives us some a decent amount of coverage over the next 3 or 4 years. We've got a year's coverage on pretty much on the Aframaxes, a bit more on some of the MRs. We've got the James Fisher ships. So, I mean, in terms of a contract cover mix, I think compared to an awful lot of owners and operators out there vying for financing, we've got quite a good charter book and quite good charter cover. The reality is, though, that the fleet is getting no younger. I mean, we've got an average age of about 9 years, and so we will compete in terms of refinancing against people that have got new building or under 5 year kind of fleets. And so banks will look at those probably a bit more favorably just because that gives them a much longer life to pay debt down. But we're having good productive conversations on this at the moment, and when we have news, we will obviously share it with the market and with our unit holders. But at the moment, the focus is on ensuring that we can get a deal that works for the trust going forward.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Jonathan Chi from ICM. Thank you. Please ask your question.
Hi, Alan. All of them seem to have been asked now, so just two quick ones. On the Shannon and the Solway renewals, initially there was an option for Fisher to buy the vessels. I can't remember what the price was, but given the negotiation now and the renewal of the lease, is that option to buy still there, or has that been taken out? That's the first question. The second question is, just listening to your discussion on the refinancing, are you at the stage where you're saying there is something that's there, if push came to shove, we could take a deal on the table, but we're trying to look for a better deal, or are you saying that there's nothing now that we'd take in an emergency? So, you know, there's a longer process involved still to get to where you want to be.
Roger, do you want to talk about the Shannon and Solway, and then I'll deal with refi?
So the Shannon and Solway, what happened basically is they had the option to renew the charter, and there was the purchase option was in there. what we've done is effectively an addendum to the original bare boat. So we've got all the security, the long going terms in the original bare boat, but with a different rate, the split rates, which Alan explained before, and they also have a purchase option as well. And the purchase option is also will be higher. It will be, if the market value is higher than the option, it will become the market value. But that's in 5 years' time, basically. So it's some way ahead. And at that stage, the ships will be 15 years old. So it's we've basically done all the calculations, and it works for us in the sense that it gives us the right return. And when the ships reach that age, they will become slightly more challenging to employ anyway.
Right. Okay, thanks.
And in terms of the refinancing, it's, I mean, the process ends up being, I mean, if you go through this with various different financial institutions, you first of all try and work out who you're going to mandate as effectively lead arrangers. I mean, this is quite a big facility. At the end of Q3, we've got $234 million that needs refinancing. At the end of Q4, that drops by about $11 million, so down to a slightly more manageable $223. But obviously, that isn't a piece of debt that one financial institution comes in and takes. You end up, as I say, mandating a lead arranger or several lead arrangers, and they put together a syndicate of financial institutions to lend to you. So what we're in the process of doing is agreeing terms that those lead arrangers can go out to the market to try and fill and syndicate. And yes, we have, if you like, term sheets on the table, but we're working with those banks to try and negotiate a better deal for the trust, I guess. And you know, we're still at the process of working out exactly where we can get to in terms of both quantum of debt and profile, tenor, all kinds of different things. So, yes, we have had indicative term sheets and things. Have we accepted any of those at this stage? No. We continue to discuss what the debt should look like going forward. It's not something that we're prepared to take the first deal on the table for, if you like.
Okay, got it. That's great. Thanks. Thanks, Alan. And congrats on your Young CFO of the Year Award. CEO.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. There are no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand the conference back to today's presenter. Please continue.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for participating in this call. We have come to the end of our results conference call. Thanks again for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking with you again next quarter. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.